Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Audible, and you listeners can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free 30-day trial and get a free audiobook.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we all have the boorish manners of a Yalie. I am your host, Bob Mackey, voted Most Improved Odor in 2016, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. And who else is here with me today?
Chris drove the least distance to be here, Antista.
It's true. Henry Gilbert, and nuts to you.
And today's episode is The Front.
This show ain't no good.
I like that little sting. And it aired on April 15th, 1993. And Chris will tell us
tax
what happened.
Day.
Ooh, yeah.
What day was it? April 15th.
April 15th, 1993.
Oh, goodness, Bobby. When you talk about television ratings, it doesn't come any bigger than North Carolina playing Michigan in the college football finals.
I'm so excited.
Indecent Proposal tops the box office, and the Arts and Entertainment Channel announces a new channel, the History Channel, and neither of which will ever deviate from their...
My favorite art and or entertainment is Dog the Bounty Hunter. Yes.
I'm partial to the Gene Simmons reality show.
I love the history of aliens at Thanksgiving.
My favorite thing I've ever seen on the History Channel, Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
That is technically history. Yeah. Yes.
I remember the original comedian's jokes about the History Channel was it was the Hitler Channel. I'm just like, you always saw Hitler
you wish.
On them.
I believe Dana Gould called it what the Klan does during the day. They say on the History
almost
Channel.
Almost a spit take.
It almost
talk
happened.
About the Civil War and and alien sightings.
So this episode, let's just get into it.
The front.
It could be the first bad one since when Flanders failed.
Oh, really? Yeah. I was informed by Dave Rudden on Twitter. You said this was the worst one. You could think of.
Actually,
all right. I just want to plug real fast. I want to plug our buddy Bart of Darkness, who gave me the shirt I'm wearing. The Timmy Bart of Darkness on Instagram. It was Christmas. I ordered Christmas ornaments. One of the piece de resistance was Bart and Krusty. An ornament with Bart and Krusty had never showed up. If not for Bart of Darkness, who sent us a care package of cool shirts, which I think you can find at like bigcartel.com.
I've been wearing them.
Yeah.
The
new one is from like the Bart licensing where he's just saying, hi, man.
Oh, I love that.
But Bart of Darkness, a great Instagram account. Thank you, buddy. You made my Simpsons Christmas work. Yes, thank you so much.
This episode really dropped in my estimation after watching it. It still has funny moments.
Yeah.
It is so loose and... It reminds me...
I was shocked that you guys hated it. I don't hate this one.
It reminds me of Last Exit.
I don't hate it.
It reminds me of Last Exit to Springfield in that it has these high concepts that are like, this is an interesting pitch, and then they don't do enough with it. Like, same with Homer running the Union. Mm-hmm. Homer going back to school to finish his high school education, that's a whole episode.
Yeah.
And they really just
service.
He gets 60 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't hate this episode. Mm-hmm. I feel it is kind of weak. Mm-hmm. And they will admit they used every trick in the book because they did not have enough show. So, of course, we have the extended opening plus the circus couch gag, a Gene and Reese signature time-extending trick.
Yes,
90 seconds.
We said that before. There's that couch gag that gets reused with a... The wall lifts up, and it's a giant... It looks like the Family Guy opening.
It really does,
And it they use that to what? Save time, or shave off time?
Shave off, like,
have to animate
an extra
stuff?
20 seconds,
if
really.
If you don't have 20 seconds of jokes in it, then you fill it with that opening.
So,
Gene and Reese are very open about that. They're like, yeah, we did it.
We have those two time killers. We have the Ned Flanders short at the end,
That's what
which is great. That's great.
He had to point out to me that, like, I stopped watching. I forgot that was there.
Yeah, me too. I forgot which one it was on.
Yeah.
And we also have lots of it, tons of ADR, tons of just ways to save on writing new jokes. It's just like, you can
pausing
see all the weaknesses.
And
yeah.
Saying a joke and a lot of cutaways to like dreams, like so many dream sequences. Yeah. And also on the production side of things, this comes right after the clip show. And then they hire a dude who just like, the way he got hired is, as Adam Lapidus explains it, the writer on the commentary explains it, he got lucky in that they're just like, look, let's just fucking make this. So as they explain it on the commentary, in my understanding, at least in the old world of sitcom writing, you don't write a script to sell that script. You write your pilot script or your pitch script to prove you can make a script, and they don't make it. So he wrote a Simpsons. He had a writing partner who was this older guy who was from the Cheers, and he was teaching him how, and who was friends with James L. Brooks. And so he's teaching him how to write. He's like, okay, write a Simpsons script. He hears a story about Steven Spielberg working with a bunch of 13-year-old kids who sent him an episode of Tiny Toons, and they animated that.
It did happen.
Bubs and Babs and Buster Go Hawaiian.
That's a great episode too.
So he hears of that episode, and he then pitches one like, "What if Bart and Lisa wrote an episode of Itchy and Scratchy?" He writes this script and submits it to James L. Brooks just for him to review it. And he's like, "Let's make this episode."
Yeah,
and that's great for Adam, but I think on the other side of it, it shows the desperation. They're like, we got a script. It can be done. Let's just fucking do it. Yeah. Like, we just did a clip show. We need another script.
And I'm not sure how things are now, but every Writers Guild show at this time needed to accept, like, 2 freelance scripts a year to, like, be a guild show, just to give new writers opportunities.
Sure.
So, in every season, you'll see, like new writers you've never seen before and will never see again, just giving scripts to the show.
It's the rare time in the first 7 seasons where a woman writes an episode. You're like, oh, yeah, she's not.
And imagine
no women staff writers.
All right, that was the Blowfish episode.
The script isn't ushered into production. It's shaped by the staff, and the person is credited with the script and story idea.
Exactly.
So this was heavily rewritten anyway, but Adam Lapidus did it. He never wrote another episode of The Simpsons. If you go to his IMDb, he got paid. he worked mainly on Disney shows like The Sweet Life of Zack.
He's
Cody.
Making that Cory in the House money now.
Cory in the House money.
Dog with the blog money, baby.
Yeah, hey, if he can make it, then do it, man. He's living the high life. He's living the sweet life.
Ooh.
With Zack like Zack. Cody.
Are they dead yet?
No, but
okay. Chris, those Disney stars have dark
well,
secrets.
And then you speak about the rewriting. So I heavily doubt that Adam Lapidus's original script was this inside.
Yes,
and I think really the Simpsons
have
writers
have caricatures of all the real Simpsons writers.
Yeah,
so this was just tired writers who were just like, well, I've been waiting for this episode because, Bob, you said this thing that I've never forgotten. They're like, every animated show will do an episode about making an animated show, at least one. Simpsons, at this point, have done like 18.
Yeah. And in this episode, so in Itchy and Scratchy and Marge, we saw behind the scenes of a cartoon. When they're writing the cartoon, they're actually putting storyboard panels on the wall. In this episode, it is very much like Itchy and Scratchy is a sitcom because The Simpsons is written like a sitcom with a writer's room full of writers and the animation team is separate and everything like that. So, like,
I remember writing a paper on The Simpsons in college, and I called it like a Simpsons is a sitcom with the biggest budget you could ever imagine.
Yeah, for sure.
They can
like
go
2 million
anywhere.
An episode.
Every celebrity you can imagine can be on. That's what made the show so great. It was a sitcom where like all the limits were broken. So it's a good distinction to point out.
Yeah, so Itchy and
Scratchy.
It's
not necessarily written like a cartoon. It's written like a show.
And Itchy and Scratchy and Marge caricatured all of the directors at the time, the 3 main ones. This one has drawings of almost every writer on the staff.
Who was still on staff when they were producing it.
Yeah, and, Waldarski and Kogan.
Yeah.
No, Jeff Martin. No, I don't think
he's
in.
No, he's there.
It.
Jeff Martin's there. But, well, let's get.
Yes, we should start talking
Conan,
about the show.
Though, because he wasn't there. Why wasn't he
there? Difficult.
Well,
there was some guy who like kind of looked like. No, I think that's.
No.
He wasn't in it, yeah.
But the show opens with another time killer, but a pretty funny one.
Now, Christy, I hear it's your birthday, so I got your mother's recipe for matzo pie.
Hey, I don't do the Jewish stuff on the air.
But I shall bubble it.
Ixnay on the OJ. Roll the cartoon.
It's so sad that Christy is ashamed of his roots.
Marge, it happened again.
What are you going to change your name to when you grow up?
Lois Sanborn.
Steve Bennett.
Some nice names. It's weird that, like, just a year and a half ago, Krusty was singing "Oh, Mein Papa" on the air with his very Jewish father. And
that really
was, like,
sold out that episode of, like, oh, you're very openly Jewish on that one. I think that was very Mike Reese. I would credit that to Mike Reese. I swear, I've heard him on commentary say "Ixnay on the Uj."
To that story's credit, like, this episode, more so than anything we've seen before, follows up on a lot of continuity.
Yeah, it does.
We see a Roger Myers Jr. again.
There are more returning characters in this episode, and that's my big problem with
it. That is really true.
We'll get to it in a second.
But Krusty is ashamed of it, meanwhile...
But that's something a fan does, it follows up on story continuity, and most of the time, the Simpsons writers avoid entirely talking about anything that's ever happened before.
Well, as long as I'm crediting jokes to people by assumption, those names like Lois Sanborn and Steve Bennett, those are specifically boring in the way Oakley and Weinstein named every character in the seasons they oversaw.
Yeah, they're very like Mr. Show style jokes where it's like the specificity of just mundanity is what the joke is.
It's true. I swear I've heard this, Mike Reese. Oh, that's another.
Itchy and Scratchy, but like, not, well, for us, it's like only a year since Itchy and Scratchy were so awesome that you'd have a movie based on them. But now they just suck.
Kids! Say no to drugs!
I could pull a better cartoon out of my ass. Hey, whoa! Wasn't that great, kids?
That's as bad as the tasteless Itchy and Sambo cartoons of the late 30s.
Wow.
The writers should be ashamed of themselves.
Cartoons have writers?
Sort of.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and I could write a better cartoon than that.
Oh, there's your episode.
I'm old enough to know that Sambo reference is
never
a clear,
got it.
It's a clear reference to, like, well, that just when you would see a racist cartoon as an adult, like, oh, that's racist. The Sambo cartoons that Ub Iwerks did.
I remember reading something about the Sambo books on which they were based, and, like, that, not unlike the Song of the South Tar Baby. Nothing patently offensive about the Tar Baby, but it got co-opted into this horrible term. And then
I don't know the origins.
The Brer Rabbit and the Tar Baby?
Of the actual, I guess it's a slur, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, no, it is a slur now. Okay. But like, so is Sam. But those were originally children's storybooks.
I remember
beloved the world over.
I remember some years ago, John McCain got in some trouble because he just used it as a metaphor of, like, this is a quagmire. We're stuck in this quagmire, and the harder we try to get out, the more we get stuck in, like a tar baby. And then people are like, ooh.
Exactly. And like,
but he's
an old man, and that's like an old folktale that extends over from fucking Africa. And like, it.
So, yes, in 1935.
Been co-opted by fucking racists and ruined by. I hate it when people
just
end
like
up
Pepe the
cartoon.
Frog, who's a kind, honest frog who just wants to get high.
So in 1935, after Ub had stopped working with Walt Disney before he came back, he did Little Black Sambo, the cartoon, which is as racist as you can imagine.
Ub Iwerks' work after leaving Disney is insane because like there's still no rating system, and his Fritz the Frog stuff, like it's really racy for the time, like almost damn near nudity on screen.
He's peeping,
like Fritz the Frog was real pervy.
Is it Flip the Frog?
Flip the Frog, sorry.
Fritz
Flip
the
Frog.
They're both sex deviants.
Yeah, but like the Ub Iwerks, it's really well done, hard to watch, but like I think they're really fun. I think Sambo was so ingrained in pop culture. Isn't that what Denny's was?
I mean, look, he didn't create the character Sambo.
Yeah.
He was just a popular character. It's just disgusting. But
for years, some asshole from Brooklyn said it about some black dude at one point, and then it became a slur, and now we can never talk about this poor character that was harmless forever. But I've seen Iwerks cartoons. They do not hold up very well.
No, they don't.
Watch them. You watch them by yourself, you'll feel uncomfortable. You watch them with any non-white person, you'll want to like just kill yourself.
I have them in a playlist that I put on at parties, so we put on music in the background. That's not going to fly today.
Many of George Pal's puppet tunes, if you know what those are, star a small black child where his lips make up about 45% of his body.
I'm not excusing any of that.
I mean, we're just talking about the history of racism in in.
I was reading an article about the books that Sambo was based on, and they're apparently like, you know, childlike wonderment, just a kid who wanders around
sure,
and gets in trouble.
Okay, yes.
And fine. But the not defending the cartoons, not defending anything. In fact, delete everything I just said.
No. Let's forget about that part. And the bit of
I never would have got it as a kid ever.
Yeah. So the thing about cartoons have writers.
Didn't no idea for a while.
That is just them just winking so hard at you. Yeah. That's your first tip of like, this is an insidery episode. And I know something from just reading books written mm-hmm. by sitcom writers of the 90s and 80s, and I bet it translates to now. Mm-hmm. They're very offended at the idea that nobody knows writers write these things. Yes. They just think, yeah, Homer just said a thing, or I watched Cheers, and isn't that Sam Malone funny? I bet he makes up all those words he says. Yeah. Like, nobody realizes a sitcom is a stage play. Somebody wrote it, and it's a play. Like,
I don't mind talking at length about this, because we got a ton of compliments about it last time from people who apparently work in the animation industry, but that I didn't really know cartoons had writers when The Simpsons were on, because I'd seen so many documentaries of like Ward Kimball and like Tex Avery, and they don't show them as writers.
You see all that Termite Terrace.
Yeah,
stuff,
you see a Termite Terrace documentary. It's like a dude dressed up as Charlie Chaplin next to a drawing board, and like it doesn't feel like a writer. He's an animator.
They just drew it until they stopped drawing it, and then it was done.
And that's how Disney and Warner Brothers worked. Like, the writers were just animators, guys, or story men, or gag people. Mm-hmm. And
he was the best gag man in town. Well, Chuck loved working.
You don't
with
refer to Chuck Jones as a writer,
no.
Even though he did.
He wrote a lot of stuff.
But even at this point, like the idea of a cartoon having writers, especially having watched the improvised make-em-ups of animation during this period. And I think that's the funny joke later on to me. Like, Simpsons were almost contemporaries to fucking He-Man. And like G.I. Joe. And like, they had every right to take down animation, their contemporaries of that nature.
They are not far removed from it. Speaking of animation, they almost censored some animation right after this. Bart has the imagination of robbing Santa.
Oh, yeah.
So he's holding it up at gunpoint, and originally the censor was not cool with Bart holding a gun, even in a fantasy. I think the way they got away with it is a Tommy gun, which is how all the guns on the Batman animated series were always Tommy guns, because you can't find that in your dad's drawer.
The handguns are in the opening, but you never see them on the animated show.
That's true, yeah. So that was one of two censored notes in here. That one didn't get cut.
And
they did all eight reindeer in that thing. Like,
Henry,
thumbs
we were just
up
bitching about that before.
Retronauts. Pac-Man Retronauts.
This is a Rich Moore production. He would not draw a reindeer.
Oh, but this is the B story. Homer comes clean about his past.
He eats soap.
An invitation to our high school reunion. Gee, that's odd. They didn't send one to you.
This is it, Homer. It's time to tell her the terrible secret from your past. Marge, I ate those fancy soaps you bought for the bathroom.
Oh, my God!
No, the other secret. Marge, I never graduated from high school.
Well, that still doesn't explain why you ate my soap. Wait, maybe it does.
I do like her. Oh, my God. When she hears that, it's very, like, over the top.
Well, I mean, he is admitting to eating soap. You're like, why would you eat soap?
Not to beat the joke to death, but like the idea of your soaps disappear, you would never assume they were eaten by your husband.
In another episode, we learn he eats daffodils or something?
That
Bart knows
tulips.
His secrets. Oh, tulips, yeah.
Homer's plight. We didn't have sweets in our house. Sometimes the soaps look like chocolate.
Yeah. So you also remember the time where like, free sample 11 time. Homer, that's...
I tried to bite a gingerbread man ornament. I'm pretty sure it's not a cookie, but why take the risk?
When I was a dumb kid, I like licked soap once and said it was vanilla scented. I was like, it didn't taste like it
smells
vanilla.
Great.
Oh, yeah. I think I did once because I watched the Christmas story a lot. Christmas story a lot. Is this really bad? Yes, it is.
Neither here nor there, but I tried to, because I did have soap put in my mouth, like in the Christmas story. So I tried one day. God, I was an awful kid. Worse than Bart. Tried to build up an immunity by licking soap all day. So like, this won't hurt again.
Soap torture.
And then Homer said, they have another Pig Latin joke right after that. Just like, come on. And the same act, two Pig Latin jokes in
the same act, two frames of animation too.
Yeah, there's a lot of recycling in there, but that Pig Latin is a lengthy way. Like, all right, that got us 10 more seconds.
Here's my big disappointment in this episode. At this point, Roger Myers Sr.?
Junior.
Junior.
Senior is the
real guy.
Is the Nazi.
But but like this is him on what is it? Itchy and Scratchy versus Marge.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Now, what in the world is wrong with that, Mrs. Simpson?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Excuse me. Excuse me. He was addressing me.
I know. There's nothing wrong with
Excuse me. There is. I think that it's a bad influence on children.
Give me a break. I think that is a bunch of baloney. And here's why. In preparing for this debate, I did a little research and I discovered a startling thing. There was violence in the past long before cartoons were invented.
I love Alex Rocco.
He's so great.
R.I.P. Yeah. We got.
But we wouldn't play the death jingle for him because he's not in this episode.
He's not in this episode, and he comes back later on, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, did they go to him or not? There's two missing.
That's what irritates me. There is a new celebrity guest in this episode, and two celebrities that don't get brought back to voice characters they have voiced before and will voice again. How the fuck did that happen?
So Hank voices Roger Myers Jr. in Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Mm-hmm.
But Alex Rocco comes back for The Day the Violence Died, season 7. Mm-hmm.
And I think Oakley and Weinstein cared more to get it. And also, Alex Rocco is an old man.
Great.
They like having old
men.
But
the perfect voice. Like,
his voice
Mo
perfect.
Green and The Godfather. He's great.
Hank tries as hard as he can, but it's still just a pale comparison to
the
original.
Just Hank.
Yeah,
Hank. Well, like, Alex Rocco's voice is so specific.
Here's Hank receiving the submission from Bart and
Lisa. Oh, wait. So Bart and Lisa write the cartoon first. Yeah. As a kid who dreamed of being a writer, I loved any time writing was dramatized on a thing. And I definitely got from my mom's work when they were throwing it out, I got to keep a typewriter once. I was like, my own typewriter, oh boy.
I remember I kind of became writer-focused the second I got my own keyboard. That's all it took. Like, oh, I can just do this all day.
Words can just show up.
Yeah. But they're reading a book on how to write cartoons written by John Swartzwelder.
Yeah, you get rich writing cartoons.
That's right, yes. Which, again, another insider joke. Mm-hmm. And then they're very lucky a cartoon just happens their window.
What's the inside joke there, that John Swartzwelder got rich writing cartoons?
Well, the joke is no one knows who John Swartzwelder is. Only if you read the credits of the episode would you even know he's a writer on the show.
For some reason, over the break, I was watching the Conan Serious Jibber Jabber thing with the Simpsons writers. And they're talking about him because he eventually chain smokes so much.
Yes,
he couldn't be in the writer's room, so
had to quit smoking or quit being in the writer's room.
So he got it seemed like he got a deal to like just turn in shit from home and never really had to go through the breaking the story stuff that anybody else did.
Well, another John Swartzwelder story is that he would then write in this booth in a diner where he could smoke all the time.
Yes.
And then when the diner went smoke-free,
he bought the booth.
He bought the booth and smoked at home.
Is that a jab? Like, if you think of your coworkers, of one coworker of yours kind of having a better deal, like never having to come into work and deal with.
Well, it wasn't at this point.
Yeah, I think at this point he was
like
still
season,
with them.
Okay. That's what I was wondering if it was sort of a jab. Like, he's not even going to be here to see that we wrote this book gag.
He's drawn in the writer's room in this episode.
Yes.
So
he was just one of the only pictures that exist of him.
Yeah, he looks like a trucker.
So we never played Roger Meyer Jr.
Snipping off her hair is also a total sell. Out of the character.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? I love that gag. But here's Roger Meyer Sr., who we didn't play before, voiced by Dan Castellaneta, and not Hank Azaria, not Alex Rocco.
You call this writing? If I puked in a fountain pen and mailed it to the Monkey House, I'd get better scripts.
But sir, at Harvard they taught
us... Oh, at Harvard they taught you? Hit the straights, egghead. You should have majored in not getting fired.
All great lines that I would have loved to hear from Alex
Rocco.
It's
like a deeper voice Mo, really. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not different from Mo
well,
that much.
And also, more inside, many of the writers on The Simpsons went to Harvard.
And
they're Harvard writers.
That's John Vitti he's yelling at, apparently.
Yeah,
a caricature of John
Vitti.
now a famous millionaire.
Who wrote the Angry Birds film. But we skipped over what their cartoon was. And
yes.
We played the clip earlier. Elvis shooting the television is based on a real
thing. Did you do all the research
thing.
In that,
I did.
Too?
I did.
Me too.
Well, I had always wondered what it really was. It was because he hated Robert Goulet.
No.
Goulet. Well, I believe that story.
No, I read a bunch about it.
Me too. Okay. I found very different stories.
All right, well, let me tell the
Please
Goulet
tell
story.
Tell the Goulet.
Yeah.
The Goulet story was that Elvis was dating a certain woman who would then go on the USO. She went on the USO tour. Mm-hmm. And Goulet was on the tour as well, and made it pretty clear to Elvis, like, I'll get with your lady, Elvis, on the USO tour. And so Elvis held a grudge against him for a long time, also because I believe Elvis wanted to be in Excalibur, the musical that Robert Goulet got famous on. Mm-hmm. Then he sees Robert Goulet on television, shoots a TV with it, pulls out his revolver, shoots a TV.
Mm, they're showing no good.
So that is the Goulet story.
So I heard that too, and he's attributed to that urban legend about Elvis. And just the more I'm nearing a point in my life where I want to do nothing but read about Elvis, because there'll never be another person that famous with that many, surrounded by that many lackeys.
Yeah.
And this, the fact that I found stories of him, yes, shooting a TV with Robert Goulet. I also found another story of him shooting a TV and winging the girl in the next hotel room.
Oh, Jesus.
At a different point. And then and more stories about him shooting televisions. And basically the consensus being like, he would do that as a joke. Not because he was mad, but
that's
just because.
That's what I heard.
And this is one for the graveyard, boys. And just there's like underneath Graceland was just a shitload of unpackaged televisions and dead televisions.
Wow.
And he'd do it all the time around his friends.
That's pretty
And that
funny.
Makes way more sense. It just.
That does.
It's still as cheap as TVs are now compared to then. Couldn't even imagine shooting a TV.
Yeah, God, it would weigh like 500 pounds.
I see YouTube videos of someone's TV breaking. I'm like, that's like 4 days of heartbreak. I couldn't even deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, I interpreted it as, okay, Elvis at this point in his life is whacked out on goofballs, has a lot of guns, so he just shoots at things for fun, and there's no real joke to it. He's just an out-of-his-mind guy on drugs.
It's a great joke, just not one I expect from an 8-year-old.
it did confuse me as a kid. Like, why are they referencing this guy who's been dead for 16 years at this point?
Yeah.
And you can find a clip online from the Kurt Russell Elvis
That's
biopic
right, yeah.
of
John Carpenter's Elvis.
Yes, yes.
How weird is that?
That's so insane.
God.
It's so strange. And I also got a new affinity for Elvis from listening to the Gilbert Gottfried podcast, where he talked to the man who directed the Star Wars holiday special, but also who directed the Elvis comeback special.
Oh, yeah.
And
baby.
Just his story of working with Elvis.
John Biner? Is that his name?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, give a listen to that episode.
Wow, really? Now I have to. Hold on, let's break for a little while. no, but their script is rejected. Barton Lee's script is rejected.
Because he doesn't read it. He just sees the names
read
of
it,
little kids.
And they rightly feel it's because they're children. If they put an adult's name on it, I don't know how a person is supposed to read the age of a person.
I guess Lisa and Bart sound like young people.
Lisa
and Maybe their childish handwriting gave it away.
Grandpa's name?
No, it's not. But the woman who presents it to him is pretty close to the actual real life Doris Groud, the script survivor. And I do love blah, 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 bling, 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 blah. Like I like that way of saying it.
Yeah, so condescending.
If Alex Rocco did it, it would have been so great.
He can't do it anymore.
Also, I know I've heard TV producers say this. You don't send unsolicited work because it goes in the trash. Because even if it's great, if they read it
and use any point of it and it can be tied back to it,
they owe you millions.
Yeah.
So they just don't read it.
No one will read unsolicited work, but this is Grandpa.
Here's a witty rejoinder for you.
Here is the front, which the episode when I was looking at the list, I'm like, what the fuck is that episode? Mm-hmm. And this is what it meant.
When I read your magazine, I don't see one wrinkled face or single toothless grin. For shame. To the sickos at Modern Bride Magazine.
Hey, Grandpa, we need to know your first name.
You're making my tombstone!
No, we're just curious.
All right, let's see. First name. Well, whenever I'm confused, I just check my underwear. It holds the answer to all the important questions. Call me Abraham Simpson.
Grandpa, how'd you take off your underwear without taking off your pants?
I don't know.
I love
such that's just him giving up like we got no.
It's a weird, but I
it's
that's
a really
one of those
weird joke.
Phrases I've adopted in my own lexicon.
Yeah, I do like it.
No,
it's funny they're calling back to his original shtick, which was writing cranky letters to the newspaper.
I miss the stereotype of crank. The crank letters were from old people who had too much time.
Yeah,
not angry millennials who have too much time. Why do they have all this time? Maybe they don't have jobs.
I have one thing to add. We didn't mention in the Itchy and Scratchy cartoon. There is a parody of a once famous production logo.
Yes!
The Stephen J. Cannell logo where Itchy and Scratchy are typing on a typewriter. They pull off a sheet of paper and it lands onto the logo.
Well, actually, they haven't produced the cartoon yet in the episode, so we haven't gotten to that point
I wrote
yet.
That down early then. I'm sorry.
Well, let's talk about The Front, the film The Front. It's one of the rare Woody Allen films that he didn't write. He just stars in it. It's a really good dramatization of The Blacklist. If you don't know about the Hollywood Blacklist, it's a good film that'll teach you about it.
And the fade-out comic from Ed Brubaker.
Yeah.
It's pretty much about that as well.
But Zero Mostel does an amazing job in it. He's great. Like, Woody Allen is really good. And,
I didn't even put that connection together.
And it's a great... It is... Woody Allen is an apolitical dude who's friends with writers who are blacklisted, and he is selling their scripts to television on his name.
It is one of the few Woody Allen movies where he's not featured lusting after an underage girl.
Because he didn't write it.
Having watched a marathon this week.
Or having like a proxy version of him do that.
Like, I'm the first to separate the art from the artist, but why is all his art about that?
You can't watch Manhattan anymore. It's impossible.
Why is it all about that?
It's just so weird. Yeah, it's just so weird. Why do people accept him? And like, well, he's dating a 16.
Anne and her sisters, whatever works. They're all about
Manhattan.
Just
is the most beautifully shot movie about a pedophile I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's such a romantic. But anyway, the front doesn't have any of that baggage because he didn't write it.
Thank God.
It's really
that and Nance. Woody Allen starred in, didn't write.
It is really good, and it's written by blacklisted writers too. It's one of the best bits. I'm slightly ruining the ending, but at the ending in the credits, every time somebody who was blacklisted's name appears in the credits, they go like, blacklisted this year.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it's this like celebration of like, we fucking won, or we outlasted you, Nixon and McCarthy and all you
shitheads.
Such a
fascinating story.
And as we enter the new era of the blacklist, I think this is going to be, it's an interesting time to look back at when America became like oppressively conservative. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with this episode, other than that they take Abe's name and sell script.
And wrong Roger Myers likes his script.
Is this the Abraham Simpson who wrote the Itchy and Scratchy episode?
Itchy and what? Oh, you must be some kind of crazy person.
I'm sorry, but we have a substantial check here for a Mr. Abraham Simpson.
That's right. I did the Iggy.
I do like that. I did the Iggy.
That's the best. My favorite Miss... saying of Itchy and Scratchy is, that's the greatest Ippy and Tippy I've ever seen.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and if you like listening and stuff, it's a good thing this episode is brought to you by Audible. And before I tell you more about it, know that you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of all Audible is. What is Audible? They've got over 180,000 different titles to choose from, ranging from audiobooks, comedy albums, radio shows, some of my favorite old-timey radio shows, and you can listen to them all on your iPhone, Android, MP3 player, desktop, tablet, doesn't matter, wherever you can plug in headphones. Audible's got all your bestsellers, your Game of Thrones, your Harry Potters, the latest biography from whatever comedian is you like, and they have become my go-to place to get audiobooks for an incredibly low cost. So once again, that's Audible, people, and you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial of the service. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Well, something we didn't talk about on Laser Time was New Year's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did a big karaoke all the way through midnight.
Yeah.
Ken and I really kill paper cut every time. I'm so
pleased. Paper cut? He just looked exhausted.
Some 41?
Every time. No, we did do Fat Lip, though.
Okay.
God, that was hard.
You guys walked in right as we started.
I know. I think I grabbed the mic. No, that wasn't
it. It was me and Pat had the mics.
I don't know any of this song.
Because it came
we
up.
We like having fun at other people's expense.
Yeah. And the other reason is, like, I don't like the song.
Suck on my fat turds.
Yeah. It's not a good song. And I don't like the mentality of that song. It's such a whiny brat song.
It's such a, like, wise beyond
before
their
white
years.
White boys are going to mess up your shit. Up your shit.
But just, like, how, like, if I was right now at this age writing a comic about children, that's how they're speaking about themselves.
Yeah.
We love to mess stuff up, dude.
Yeah, and it's like, you guys, the 90s already happened. I'm sorry, you're too late.
So there's a reference for no one, but they are the River Bottom Nightmare Band of the Emmett Otter Jug Band Christmas, where they sing about how bad they are. We don't brush our teeth to help us stay mean.
Yeah.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
another part that bugged me in rewatching it was him throwing the thing again at the writer. Like, it's just
reused.
It's so reused. The lighting changes completely.
It's a night scene.
Come on.
Yeah, and they reused the day scene shot of that. Yeah.
And it's like, you guys couldn't find another place to add 14 seconds? Like, this just completely breaks you from the scene.
That joke had to happen.
This is so weird. I'm getting just points. Maybe this show isn't lovely because I don't have like a something I could easily declare line of the show. Mm-hmm. But just Homer reading off his yearbook.
This is
I'm just going to throw that the line of the show.
That's the joke.
Ah, my high school yearbook. You handsome devil. I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Had to have that explained.
Activities? None. Sports?
None.
None. Honors? None.
Yep.
So many memories.
That was my reunion.
It'll be great to see the old gang again. Potsy, Ralph Malph, the Fonz.
That was happy days.
No, they weren't all happy days. Like the time Pinky Tuscadero crashed her motorcycle. Or the night I lost all my money to those card sharks and my dad, Tom Bosley, had to get it back.
Art is just sadly accepting, like, he's not going to change his mind.
I do still love that, but I love being able to point out, if you're like 15 years younger than us, you're not going to get the Happy Days reference immediately.
I mean, I didn't really get it then either.
Me either.
I was 10. I wasn't
Pinky Tuscadero.
I tolerated Happy Days, but it was my least favorite.
Yeah, it was on
rerun
all the time.
I don't think I ever watched it until a year and change later when Weezer popularized it with Buddy Holly.
Yeah. I had to learn that, like, my dad's like, why are you watching Happy Days? I'm not asshole. It's Mork and Mindy. Who cares about Happy Days? Like,
I would prefer that to.
It was on Nickelodeon as opposed to everything else. Like, in the middle of the day. What are we talking about?
But I hated yearbooks. I came to hate yearbooks. I thought I'd like yearbooks when I saw them as a concept. I just looked at my old junior high yearbook. Like, my mom got it. Like, hey, I brought this with me. Yeah. Looky there. I was like, I hate me, and I hate these memories, and goodbye yearbook.
Made me mad aspiring to nothing in high school and having no accolades of any kind and not being involved in any club and literally being kind of invited into a school because I was good at soccer, but I quit because I liked being morose and pot more.
They called Chris the White Pele.
Wele. They kept trying to get me to join the soccer. I'm not joining your stupid soccer team. Nirvana's awesome, and you're gay. And, like, that was me in high school, and I didn't do anything ever. And I'm just sort of like, I don't know, bummed out by that. Now I want to kickstart a project. I have no idea how to do it because I wasn't involved in any groups or clubs.
No, I just faked my way through school, Chris. It's easy.
Yeah,
I was very confused by I Can't Believe I Ate the Whole Thing, which is
Tums commercial?
It's Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer, yeah.
If you saw, I eventually would see clips of classic commercials and see that one, and it's famous. It's just this guy who's up late at night with indigestion. He's like, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. That's, like, he ate a giant sandwich.
And his wife is like, you ate it, Ralph.
We should get to that too,
because
you mentioned Steve and Jay Cannell Productions, that when they show one of the Itchy and Scratchy shows, they have a what do you call that? A production logo parody. Yeah. And it's so on the nose that I'm like, this is really more of a Family Guy joke. Because Family Guy did it too.
Yes,
They did the exact same joke. And I was watching Family Guy just last night, and it's just Peter so drunk and he's incoherent and like, fuck you, Lord. Ah. And then he's like passing out, and like, Peter, go to bed. And he's like, Ray, we always say we didn't steal from The Simpsons, but we stole a lot. Like, it was so
that
good.
It was so good.
They will make that joke, but then continue stealing.
Also, I never watched...
Chalk it up to Parallel Thought. This isn't a great reference.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's cute. It's cute.
I didn't watch every episode of Happy Days, but I checked this online. I could not find one episode where Pinky Tuscadero crashes her bike or Card Shark steal Richie's money.
We get a sound effect for the dedication award and give it to Henry there.
I mean, maybe it did happen in an episode, but I could not find one.
Well, here's the logo they're referencing.
Yeah.
I had to get some of that. Steve and Jay Cannell Productions did the A-Team. That's from Hart and McCormick.
Yeah, Hardcastle and McCormick.
Hardcastle and McCormick, the commissioner. So
riding like the demon.
A ton of 80s stuff. And if there's a Did you see the montage online?
Yeah, they update his like look and his typewriter and stuff throughout the years.
It's so vain and crazy beautiful to watch as his temples get grayer and the Emmys start to surround him more. They reshot it like every year of him throwing the paper from the typewriter.
Bring that
him.
Crane in my office. It's time.
I do like that quite a lot, though. I liked. I always preferred the one at the end of Cheers, Sit, Ubu, Sit.
Good dog.
Yeah,
that's a great one. So when they go to the reunion, I actually really like it because it is a sequel to The Way We Was, and it is their 20. Well, the math doesn't work out because it is Welcome Class of 74, because that did happen in 74.
Yeah,
but so they are having that reunion in 1993.
Maybe I can't explain.
I do hope someone got fired for that.
It's not. It's a 19-year high school reunion. I don't think so.
From the episode The Way We Was, this is Artie Ziff from that episode.
Marge, this may not be the most appropriate forum for what I'm about to put forth, but would you go to the prom with me?
Whoa.
Well, I can think of a dozen highly cogent arguments. Now, the first is from Time Magazine, dated January 8th, 1974.
That is like the most subdued John Lovitz.
It's like his first time.
I mean, everyone was very low-key in season 2 and 1.
Yeah, and this is Artie Ziff coming back for this episode, I guess, the first time?
First appearance.
First time, yeah.
But he's been back several other times.
I think the next time would be season 14, the Ziff who came to dinner. Or
Half-decent proposal. Let's hear this clip first.
Oh my God, it's my old boyfriend, Artie Ziff.
Hello, Marge. Have you heard? I'm stinking rich. Jealous?
I'll bet you trade it all for one night with my wife.
I would.
Homer!
So,
as you said in the history.
Yeah, that's right.
The movie's not out yet.
The movie is out this week. It was based on a book, so the book existed before.
But I remember, I feel so old talking about Indecent Proposal, how it was highly controversial, how Woody Harrelson is approached by Robert Redford to give him $1 million for a night with his wife, and that movie came out like the same week as this episode, essentially.
Demi Moore, right?
With Demi Moore. I didn't mention Demi Moore. But it was like hugely controversial in the news. Like they're gonna make a movie out of this indecent book.
Adultery.
It says indecent in the title. It's giving you a warning. Come on.
But I did think that was. That's why I put it in there. I thought it was kind of ironic.
Do you want to talk about how they actually made this into an episode, Henry?
So yeah, when you listen to the commentary. Oh, you can see them realize they should do, like, Al Jean is like, we should do this episode. And so they hear the joke, and then when they actually bring back Artie Ziff in season 13, which was being produced when they recorded this commentary, Al Jean says it in the commentary. Like, then they bring him back, and he makes an indecent proposal to Marge.
And I think he like has a private island. Eventually, he would become like a dot-com failure and be bankrupt. But at this point, he's had money.
It'll damage the town,
and he recreates the prom at his like private island. Yeah. It's been years since I've watched
it.
It's not a great episode,
but
I love that. Like, so Artie Ziff's first appearance, very subdued, and Dan Castellaneta's performance is on par with like my or anybody else's John Lovitz impression.
I'm John Lovitz.
See,
I also like the cuteness of that Do the Hustle scene because that was the exact animation of the time they danced to Do the Hustle in The Way We Was when they took the study break. When she's teaching him French,
and they're both presenting like mammals
up
to each other's butts.
They bounce their butts together, and the camera moves up the exact same way. There was care in animating it the same way.
I didn't notice that. That's awesome.
And by the way, the class clown. On the commentary, they allege that they heard that Hank Azaria was that guy in high school. So Azaria playing him in this is...
Because his hairstyle is so specific to like someone who never left the 70s.
I don't like this character, though, because I feel like there's no hook or like twist to him. It's just like he's just presenting these jokes straightforward. And the joke is that Homer's explaining them to
If you're someone, again, younger than us, you'd have to explain those who these people
I guess
are to him.
I got it. But
I mean, I needed the explanations. I didn't know who Richard Nixon was when I was 9. I think the joke is that class clowns are never funny. They're just reference machines. And so they grow up to, the class clown grows up to not be a comedy writer like the great comedy writers on the show.
We're all introverted nerds.
They grow up to be the same loser before. But also, I love the joke of Homer constantly explaining obvious references to Marge. And Marge is like, I know.
Yeah. Except for the one that, like, I never would have got. Cheech and Chong was something I was not exposed to at this point. But that's where the Dave's Not Here thing comes from.
Hey, man, it's Dave. Open up, man.
Dave's not here, man.
Okay, now let's move on.
The guy's so high, he doesn't even know that's Dave.
Homer. Homer?
Homer's not here, man.
Okay, very good. Now let's get on with our really big show.
Ed Sullivan. Shh.
I do love that. And the Cheech and Chong reference, Dan Castellaneta would write an episode for Cheech and Chong to appear in 2011.
Oh, that's right.
Where Homer teams up with Cheech after Chong quits.
Oh,
and then they get together. It's just a love letter to Cheech and Chong, which I'm like, sure.
That is one of those things. I've watched a ton of those movies. It's fine to cast those into the ocean.
Oh, the movies suck. I got a lot of fun out of the records when I was a kid. I played my mom's old records a lot, and I love those, even though I didn't get into drugs until much later.
There's one movie that's just them doing their songs, and I think that's really funny.
Hmm.
But, yeah, Cheech and Chong, man. Holy
the
shit.
The Corsican brothers can just rot in hell forever.
How could they even make that?
That was like Comedy Central afternoon fodder for like 8 years.
Ideas aren't here, man. That was bad. Yeah. But Homer is eventually
shamed. Homer wins all those awards, and I like that he recognizes he's in a rut. He's like...
And the person who traveled the least distance to be here will kiss my grits. Homer Simpson.
What can I say? It hasn't been easy staying in my rut.
Class of 74, I was just leafing through your permanent records when I discovered something shocking. Homer Simpson never passed Remedial Science 1A and thus never graduated from high school. I'm sorry, Simpson. I'm going to have to take back those awards.
What a petty principle, by the way.
We have the return of Dondelinger.
Dondelinger rightly hates Homer. I don't mind him. And, you know, I didn't mention it before, but Homer not graduating does fit within... He doesn't say, I'm not going to pass this class, but Homer says that he was embarrassed by Marge and avoided her all the rest of the school year and is going to have to hopefully make it up in the summer.
By never going back to school.
God. Clearly, he didn't make it up in the summer.
That's a great payoff.
So, yeah.
I respect that.
It does fit, and it's Dondelinger again.
We have a scene, though, after this where Barney gets off pretty light. It's like his cummerbund fell in the toilet. We've seen Barney dressed as a baby, getting his diaper blown off, and meeting his mom at the same time. I mean, having your cummerbund fall in the toilet is embarrassing, but Barney's been through so much worse.
Hey. Barney has a cummerbund. Do you? Do you, Henry?
No,
I don't.
I have no reason to have one.
I'm just
and
saying.
It's quite...
Barney does.
But it also shows you how cheap that joke is. Like, who's the guy who asked him that? Who is that guy? He's nobody.
That's right.
He's not one person. They could have at least, like... Couldn't they have just
Barney.
Found one?
Oh, no. Somebody else.
Yeah. The guy says, where's your cummerbund?
I'm thinking there's no other Simpsons character in the high school with them at that time, right?
Yeah.
Until much later.
Because he says at one point, the old gang. I'm like, who the fuck was the old gang?
His friend was Barney, one.
Later, they retcon it. Like, they retcon Lenny and Carl being their friends.
Fuck that,
that's
man.
Stupid.
Hey, all my work friends are way stronger than my high school friends at this point.
Yeah, I have no high school friends.
Abe gets to say his line about my chest hurts, which is kind of his like reaction.
He does, but I don't know. This is what leads me to believe the Simpsons writers had something to do with it, because they seem to make fun of themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty proficiently.
All right, leeches, I want you to see what a good writer looks like. His name is Abraham Simpson, and he's got something you couldn't get at your fancy schools: life experience.
Actually, you know, I wrote my thesis on life experience. And
quiet.
That's LG.
Hey, tell them about your amazing life.
I spent 40 years as a night watchman at a cranberry silo.
Wow. So?
We learn a lot about Abe. I like the reaction. Wow.
Wow.
Okay, so much is happening here. They go into the Simpsons writer's room, which is as shitty as it looks in the cartoon.
The serious jibber-jabber thing has it. And it is, in, like, for this picture, they brought in standees of the characters, because... That's the only decoration. Those were not there.
There's an air conditioner in the window.
Yeah. It looks like a therapy session.
It's horrible.
And based on what you hear, I bet it smelled like fast food grease and farts. Yes. Just like a bunch of men, single men, writing cartoon jokes, eating fast food all day. And cigarettes.
And so they pan across and you can see them all. There's Schwartzwelder.
Yeah.
Jeff Martin.
Al Jean.
Mike Reese. Same. Mike Reese is fatter. He talks about it on the commentary. They're like, oh, that's you.
Oh,
they're
that
like,
sucks.
No, that's Sam Simon. I'm the other one there. I got pretty fat.
That's somehow worse than a picture. You have an animated version of you that is skinnier.
Yeah.
He said that's how he realized that he's like, he got fat. Every writer says on the commentary, if you don't get fat on The Simpsons, something's wrong with you, because you are just
candy, fast food.
You're sat in a room all day. The only fun you get is to eat garbage while sat in a room all day.
There's a funny anecdote on the commentaries too, where Al Jean, Dan Castellaneta was going to voice Al Jean's counterpart, mm-hmm. and he's like, "What are you doing that crazy nerd voice for? I don't sound like that." He really does sound like
Al Jean. He's a little sensitive about his voice, which is very nasal.
Yeah,
though he jokes.
I
want to
hug him,
too.
Then dump his books every time I hear him.
And yeah,
I'm Al Jean.
You can actually hear Al Jean punch a guy in the commentary for making fun of his voice. He's like, "You didn't like his voice. He said it. You didn't recognize. He said it was too nasal." He's like, "Yeah, that's right." Thunk.
And we see Swartzwelder, and they make a joke on the commentary about
so many times.
There's an arrow pointing to his character design where his gut is, and it says guts. And I think the animation reason for that is to let animators know you paint that a different color, like that is flesh. But he still has a giant like pot belly, like blasting through his shirt.
And they're like, "Oh, that's kind of mean," especially when Conan says about that about Swartzwelder at that time. Mm-hmm. He says that he was a handsome guy, that if you had dressed him up as a 1910 policeman, he'd be the most handsome 1910 policeman.
Well, Conan certainly has a type.
Yeah.
And so Al Jean's voice really gets it in this, but I wonder what the first version of that voice was.
And they kind of cheat, too, because it does not take 6 to 9 months to make Itchy and Scratchy happen. It happens, like, overnight. Yeah, like, I don't know if they're... We see that they're doing it overseas in Itchy and Scratchy the movie, mm-hmm. but apparently they can fast-track it to Mexico or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening.
Wasn't it amazing that, like, what they animated was exactly what Bart and Lisa imagined.
Yes.
They animated it perfectly. You can also tell from the nicotine patches jokes, at least some of the writers were using nicotine patches.
Yeah, they were a new thing. My stepdad had them at this time, and it was like, wow.
I did
but
love
he's still smoking.
This joke, because Grandpa doesn't even know this is happening.
Dad, can we talk to Grandpa alone for a minute?
All right, but if he starts to wig out, try to lure him into the cellar.
Then we put your name on the script and sent it in.
Didn't you wonder why you were getting checks for doing absolutely nothing?
I figured because the Democrats were in power again.
Boom.
Yeah. What?
That's also a joke in Treehouse of Horror, too. It's like, I don't need it. I don't want it. But if it doesn't show up, I'll raise hell. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not in the mood for jokes about Democrats giving away too
much. Here, how about Homer being dumb?
All right. Here are your exams. 50 questions. True or false?
True.
Homer, I was just describing the test.
True.
Look, Homer, just take the test and you'll do fine.
False.
That's a very, very vaudeville thing.
I love those.
But Chris, you skipped one of two consecutive fantasy sequences in which Abe is in drag.
Yeah, I know.
And is seducing men. In this one, it's two cowboys. In the next one, it's Hitler.
Yeah. I got Hitler. So ein Bubi.
Das ist not ein Bubi.
Two episodes in a row, he's dreaming of being in a dress.
Yeah.
It's, you also didn't get it, but the little song Grandpa sings in Homer's vision. Mm-hmm. She's like, la 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 la. It's so cute.
Yeah.
I got his, another instance of Homer's brain speaking to him.
All right, brain. You don't like me and I don't like you. But let's just do this and I can get back to killing you with beer.
Mm.
It's a deal.
Actually,
I feel like I say that when I write every day.
That's true. I think my favorite joke in the episode actually comes from the 8 seconds they spend at Homer in night school, but when Don DeLinger is talking about how he just lost his wife, and Homer says like, "Will this be on the test?"
No.
And he just goes, "Oh," him erasing dead wife.
It's all that's written on one page in giant letters, dead
so
wife.
Somebody dead wife.
But you cut to the award show.
Abe becomes a popular enough writer that
I
Krusty
love that
is
clip.
Introducing episodes.
Yeah, that's
when
I had
by.
That for like the episode intro clip.
And now here's another fine Itchy and Scratchy cartoon by Abraham Simpson.
It's beautiful to think of a cartoon writer that prolific, that children would scream when his name is announced on a clown TV show.
And that skinless Scratchy is one of the scariest images. Like, it's horrifying.
I think of that whenever I'm on an escalator.
Yeah,
just
me
like
too.
Getting my skin ripped off by it. It's like a Freddy Krueger kill almost.
Yes.
Like,
And then it always looks so weird when they draw humans with human with Caucasians in the Itchy and Scratchy cartoons. It's always confusing.
That was very because it's does that happen before?
Why do they have to be people?
Did that happen before?
I can't think of a human. So.
I had that as a note that like these are the only real white people you see are in the Itchy and Scratchy cartoon. Yeah, the feminists.
I mean, that's weird.
The anti-fur feminist. Yeah, it's very strange because you don't see that color palette on a human being the entire show. Yeah,
like literally. Instead, actually, we see that when Homer imagines Bart and Lisa as realistic humans, and that's it.
Yeah.
In the next season. Yeah.
And there's also... I like that they're hanging a lantern, as comedy writers would say, on the fact that they're not explaining anything where... formerly Alex Rocco says to him, "Hey, I fired all the other writers. It all rests on your delightful little coconut." Mm-hmm. "Oh, no, I'm a fraud. What was that? I wasn't listening. And I got to go now."
Yes.
Like that's them going like, yeah, this doesn't make sense, but fuck it.
It's kind of ambiguous throughout if Abe actually knows what's happening, because in the beginning, he doesn't know what his name is. And we're not sure if he's being tricked or if he knows that he's just getting checks for doing nothing and Bart and Lisa are actually doing this. There's a cut scene that explains
there's
that he does
leads.
Know.
Yeah.
Oh, there is.
We'll get to that after the show.
Okay,
though,
but I love Krusty's take here, but again, it irritates me that they have a celebrity guest star and didn't bother bringing back people who voiced
Sorry, I forgot there's one bit of history, too.
I have one as well.
So when they're dressed, the lines are all off, so it's clearly ADR'd. Abe says, "To think that a man who once took a shot at Teddy Roosevelt could earn your trust." Now, that did really happen. Teddy Roosevelt, while he was running for his third term in the Bull Moose Party, which he did not work. It was the first third party, really, it's the most successful third party to that point in American election history. So he is shot by a saloon keeper named John Schrank. Schrank. And so he
Dracula from Nosferatu,
and Schrank's reasoning was that no man should be president three terms. He was wrong.
Then he said, "Paint my chicken coop."
So he shot him in the chest, and the chest hit his glasses case.
Wow.
And his rolled up speech.
Wow.
And even though, but he's also still bleeding. Like, it did hit him. It just slowed it down.
Damn.
But Teddy says, like, "It'll take more than a bullet to stop this bull moose." And he gives an hour-long speech and then leaves and then gets
treats
medical
his
treatment.
Wound. I'd go for him again if I could.
But he... But so that's what really happened.
My historical contribution, whenever they're walking around Itchy and Scratchy Studios, you'll see a font and an awning that is a reference to Walt Disney's Burbank Studios.
That's right.
Very clearly that doesn't entirely exist anymore.
And that repeating backgrounds joke doesn't work with the animation.
It doesn't work
in
audio
the background
at all.
Because
they wouldn't spend that much money to repeat a background.
Hanna-Barbera wouldn't do that.
So we have like two great animation jokes in a row.
Yeah.
We have Strongdar, Master of Akon.
Well, I just love. Well, this is also a slam on award shows.
Wasn't it dark that?
And now to present the award for outstanding writing in a cartoon series, Krusty the Clown and Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields, Brad, you could have gotten you Lovitz and Rocco.
Here we are, the star of the Blue Lagoon, and me, the blue-haired goon. What the? That's terrible.
Cartoons have the power to make us laugh and to make us cry. Wouldn't you agree, Krusty?
First of all, my hair is green, not blue. I got nothing to work with here. Nothing.
He just leaves.
I think that's the actual reaction of a writer reading that line in the script and getting mad about it in the writing room.
I recall me and my mom both joking, laughing at this, like, "Yeah, his hair is green. It's green hair."
I think they really greened it up, though, for that scene.
That is true. It maybe is blue, but and wasn't it a dark joke that Grandpa asked Bart and Lisa to get him an escort?
Like, yeah.
That's an onion in the ointment.
Yeah. He's not covered with her insurance.
That would have been my line of the show. Yeah. Onion in the ointment. But this is Brooke introducing the nominees. I don't know if we talked about this a bunch before.
These are kind of out of time because, they're mocking one current thing, but the other two things they're mocking are just 80s cartoons.
Yeah.
The nominees for best writing in a cartoon series are Action Figure Man, the How to Buy Action Figure Man episode.
Please, Mommy, I want it.
I love the mom's stern look. Like, I don't know about this.
Ren and Stimpy, season premiere.
Clip not done yet. Take that, Junkie.
And finally, Itchy and Scratchy, the Little Barbershop of Horrors episode.
Cross my fingers for me.
That's gonna hurt come winter.
Oh, so many good old man lines.
So Ren and Stimpy season 2, yeah. Clip not done yet. Yeah. Infamously, John Kay was fired in, I believe, August of 92 because they gave him so many chances, but he delivered one of a promise, I think 10 or 20 episodes.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, and it was the one that was too hot for TV, but not really. It was just a good excuse to fire him. If you look up the Laser Time episode Creators Fired, I go on a 20-minute insane rant about how
Bob
John Kay was
fired. I just read Sick Little Monkeys, which is a really, I don't know, eye-opening story about how modern television animation works. Maybe not so much modern now, but like
of that age, of that renaissance that they kind of helped start.
Just the importance of storyboarding
and layout.
And laying
out
stuff.
A cable company had never done original programming to that extent before, too. So Nickelodeon was learning things.
Oh, yeah.
Original animated programming to that
extent. It makes
John
Kay look like a dick, but I completely put some of that on Nickelodeon for not knowing how the production of their own cartoon was supposed to work.
And Nickelodeon did not want Ren and Stimpy, but the executive in charge of Nicktoons was like, I will put my job on the line. This will be great. This will be popular. And it was.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
It made them, but it is such a specific and mean joke. Like, it is a mean...
You wrote about that for Laser Time, Henry, and I think we discussed drunkenly at a bar one time animated feuds that ended up in the product.
Yeah.
And
the grudges in it. And it was... He took a swipe at them first.
He badmouthed everybody.
And everybody, because he was like, I'm king of the world. I'm the genius of cartoons, and everything I say is right.
And I can make 2 cartoons a year, so someone hire me.
So, the Simpsons were right to take a swipe at him, though.
It's evident of a smaller world. It's like if Pendleton Ward of Adventure Time came at Seth MacFarlane. Like, they're like, we're not competing.
We're the South Park guys.
But back then, it was like, all the primetime animated shows or the cable animated shows were sort of on an even level where there's like 4.
And Ren and Stimpy was still huge. Now.
Yeah.
Season 2, lots of tons of great episodes.
Yeah. Whenever they
talked
about Ren and Stimpy, like I always say, whenever they would write about the Simpsons in the early 90s, they'd mention the Flintstones cause there was nothing else to compare it to.
Yeah.
And whenever they wrote about Ren and Stimpy, they're like, they'd have to write up the Simpsons. And they're so not the same, but they were part of the same era and phenomenon.
Yeah. It's like cartoons aren't for kids anymore.
I wonder what the animators thought of this episode, because this episode, seemingly, writers make animation and not animators.
It is so writer-focused. We don't see any of the actual artistry happening.
So I wonder what, Rich Moore thought of this while animating it. And then the ending really is just out of left field and just really to end it. Like, Abe sees the cartoon and realizes how violent it is. And by the way... 2 seasons ago, they did an episode of defending cartoon violence to an extent, and now this ends with a certain level of sermonizing.
The message is so weird. I don't really get it, what they're trying to say.
Trying to end the episode.
That's basically it, yeah. It's like
well, Abe
that was the first time I ever saw Itchy and Scratchy, and I didn't like it one bit. It was disgusting and violent. I think all you people are despicable. For shame!
He's right. We've been wasting our lives.
The hell with cartoons. I'm going to do what I've always dreamed of. I'm going to write that sitcom about the sassy robot.
So Matt Groening did do that.
He wrote that sassy robot.
Yeah, and that's Al Jean and Mike Reese, and they wrote a sitcom about a sassy angel. They wrote the sitcom Teen Angel for TGIF after leaving The Simpsons.
And they would quit this season. Like, they're on their way to quitting when they're animating them quitting.
I do want to watch one episode of Teen Angel to see if there's any of that Jean and Reese, like, bite to it. There's got to be at least, like, one joke.
In the first episode, I only watched first episode. In the first episode... the kid's friend dies. Like, he eats a Pet Sanders and dead. And then it's like, that's how you start the show.
But, yeah, I mean, that's how he becomes Teen Angel, right?
And then his mom is played by Mrs. Ben Stiller in Brady.
Was it Dean Taylor?
Yes, that's right.
If I may be Henry or comic book guy for a second.
Okay.
It's the first time Abe has seen Itchy and Scratchy. We now know they date back to the era Abe was wearing dresses in World War II.
Yeah.
And there was literally nothing else to watch.
Yeah, okay, in this case, the same with saying like, oh, well, Abe said his job was at the cranberry silo, but another time he says that Abe is an unreliable narrator and nothing should count as canon because Abe remembers it. He remembers nothing.
He can't remember his name again at the beginning of this episode. Like, so, what's my name? Look at my underpants.
So if Abe says that, then you don't know. And then extra tacked on is the ending, like, Homer saying, hey, I did pass, the end, like, and just so you get some closure there. You pretty much forgot that even happened.
A flash forward to 2024, which is coming up in, Jesus Christ,
years,
7 years, right?
7 years, yeah. Right when Trump finishes his second third term. Yeah.
And then we still need to kill some time, so here's a Ned Flanders short out of nowhere, which will never happen again,
to my knowledge.
I love it. I love this. It's great.
I love that. I love the... Hens
love roosters, geese love ganders, everyone else loves Ned.
Not me.
Everyone who counts loves Ned Flanders.
So crazy.
What the fuck? Like, Dave had to remind me this was in the episode after you tweeted you didn't like it. And, like, that wasn't in the episode. It's like, yeah, it's at the very end.
I like parts of this episode, and this is what I like the most, I think.
This is my favorite. This is a good... This isn't a bad episode, but
where did this come from? I mean, it's a parody of cartoons.
It's a comic book parody, yeah, really. So, in Archie comics and in other gag comics, and this would rarely happen in superhero books, but in gag comics, sometimes your story ends before you're done, and you've got to fill 22 pages. And so, or you've even not filled half a page. Well, what are we going to do? All right, a quick comic strip style gag of just a quick joke to fill that space, and then you're finally done. And that's the same deal. They came up with just a quickie joke that was done in Archie comics back then of, like, Reggie starring in Date Mistake.
But, yeah. they would have tacked this onto an episode were it not about animation or writing.
No, this is
for
just
cartoons.
Time.
They,
like,
needed to kill
time.
So this is just wasting time.
20 seconds, they don't have to write anything else to the main story.
And
I don't hate it. I love this scene.
This is
we can play it, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the only one.
Love that god.
Knock that off, you two. It's time for church.
We're not going to church today.
What? You give me one good reason.
It's Saturday.
Oakley-dokley-doo.
Hens love roosters, geese love ganders, everyone else loves Ned Flanders.
Oh, man.
And that logo is even very Archie.
It really is. So, okay.
I love that bit.
In season 5 and onwards, we need to figure out what to do with deleted scenes, because there's at least one per episode. But on this DVD set, there's like maybe 3 episodes they have deleted scenes for, and this is one of them. So I want to go over what was on those deleted scenes, if you don't mind. So the first one, Roger Myers dictates a letter to Bart and Lisa. It's them reading it, and Lisa saying, I know this word, but what's Shinola? So he's saying, you don't know shit from Shinola.
Why wasn't that kept? Like, unless it was a censor note.
There's one. It probably was, Henry. So there's another one that I think is a good
image of shit in the audience's mind.
They're so desperate for time. Yeah. They needed that joke.
There's like 3 minutes of cutscenes, maybe 2. So this is a good joke, but I think it relies on a movie nobody knows. So they cut it out. So Homer is pledging to finish high school to Marge, which is like a very important scene, I think, that we don't see. So Homer says, you know that movie about the woman who fell off the mountain? I think it was called Don't Fall Off the Mountain. And Marge says, what's your point? And Homer says, I will learn to ski. I mean, graduate high school. And he was referencing the movie The Other Side of the Mountain about a skier who fell off a mountain. Apparently was very popular in the 70s, so it's a 70s reference.
Yeah.
We have a scene of Abe calling Itchy and Scratchy Richie and Kathy, which just comes out of nowhere. There's a scene of Jim Reardon blowing up a real cat with dynamite for reference.
That was cut by the censors. They did not like that animal island.
It's part of the animation tour. Like, how do you get these great, like, scenes happening? And they have him putting, like, dynamite in the cat's mouth, and then they cut away, and we just hear an explosion. There's one scene in here where it shows that Abe knows what's happening, and he's thinking of ideas, like, pacing back and forth and telling Lisa. And then he says, I'll just sit in the corner and play with my teeth, after they yell at him.
That's a great line.
And there's a final great scene where Roger Myers Jr. fires Abe after his tirade, after his rants. And he says, I don't need your stinking money. And then he says, can I have a nickel for the trolley? So there's like 5
cut scenes. All of these.
Yeah, these could have all fit into the show if they needed time.
For a show that's desperate for time, that has so many lines in it. Yeah, the Ned Flanders scene was their inspiration for 22 short films about Springfield. Oakley and Weinstein love that bit so much. Like, what if we just had, like, just a bunch of short jokes interconnected? I always wish they had done that.
Why I was confused. Is this the only one? Because, well, they did it with Cletus.
Until 22 short stories, this is the only one. Yeah. And, you know, so in conclusion.
In conclusion.
I think this episode, I remembered liking it a lot more than when I rewatched it. I just see a lot of weaknesses now, and just, like, it's slapdash, unfinished thoughts. A lot of recycled animation and redone lines, but there are still a lot of funny stuff in it, and I do like how deep it goes into the inside jokes of making The Simpsons.
In the words of Homer, it's just a bunch of stuff that happened, I think.
True.
That's really, that sums up this episode well. So yes, that was Talking Simpsons, everybody. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on the internet as Bob Servo on Twitter. I also write for SomethingAwful.com and Fandom.com every day. And my other podcast is Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast you can find every Monday at Retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. You'll find it. Almost 200 episodes of great stuff.
Mm-hmm. Laser Time is where this show started and where the show continues to exist at lasertimepodcast.com. But if you want to support us and this show, patreon.com/lasertime, you get an exclusive show every week. Also want to encourage people to check out Video Game Apocalypse and 302010, our weekly video game shows, and the pop culture show that looks back 30, 20, and 10 years ago to that week and occasionally brings up The Simpsons on shows we'll cover more in depth, hopefully, if we continue to survive.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter is me, baby. And you can also, like Chris said, support us on patreon.com/lasertime. I know lots of people signed up at December time. It's always good to get new signups because you'll get access.
And then got out before it was time to pay.
You'll get access to the, well, please stick around. You'll get access to the first season of Talking Simpsons as well as our year-end wrap-up specials, our season wrap-up specials, which... we're careening close to another one.
Oh, man. Can we even do another one? I don't know.
We have plenty of stuff.
Bob and I have talked about this.
Okay. Yeah.
We've used work time to discuss this idea.
It's the best time.
Yeah.
Tune in next week for when we start our whacking, everybody. See you then.
Infotainment.